I'm doing a session on 12-step groups, and we'll be talking a little bit about how they work, some of the implications they have for the church and our life together. And I think that's enough to start out with. How many people in here have had some contact or awareness or knowledge or experience with 12-step groups prior to coming here? So, good. That's great. I hope you'll contribute your experience and wisdom to the conversation as we go along. As someone first asked, how do 12-step groups work? And the response was, they work just fine, thank you. So for those of you who have been involved with them, you know that that's kind of the common knowledge of how they are working. My own experience started with working on an Indian reservation in northern Minnesota, where they were attempting to use AA among the alcoholism problems among the Native Americans. And that has its own implications as well, and maybe we can talk a little bit about that as well. And then I started working in the field of addictions, and you can't work in that field and not be affected and use the 12-step program. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. I want to talk a little bit about how they first began and how they work, and I do have some copies of some of the 12 steps actually as taken from Alcoholics Anonymous. And so if anybody wants to refer to those, or some people probably know them almost by heart, which is common as well. But if you want to just have some reference point for them, those are available. I limit the amount of Xeroxing I do whenever I come to hold it. The conscience works on us here. So a little bit about the history of AA. It began about 50 years ago in 1935, a little more than that now, I guess. And it had its roots in the Oxford movement at the end of World War I. There was a number of evangelical Christians who kind of took up the cause, and out of that was a stockbroker and a physician who learned how to stop drinking but didn't know how to stay stopped, and borrowed some of the concepts from the Oxford movement and developed what is now known as Alcoholics Anonymous, which was really the first 12-step program to ever get started. And since then, have developed numerous 12-step programs. Just to give you an idea, there's the first one to follow that was Al-Anon, which was a 12-step program that was designed for the families and friends of people who struggled with alcoholism. Gamblers Anonymous, I think, was the next one to come. Overeaters Anonymous, Emotions Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Schizophrenics Anonymous, Parents and Families, Mistresses Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, Adult Children. So there's groups for all those people addicted to religion, sex, money, shopping, relationships, and even worrying. And I've jokingly said that the most recent one that I've heard about is Paranoids Anonymous. And when I called up to find out where they were meeting, they wouldn't tell me. They were so paranoid, they didn't even want to give out that information.
It's Schizophrenics Anonymous?
Yeah, that's...
Can't decide where to meet.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's good.
Two different locations.
And they creep in the door. And, yeah.
We had Debtors Anonymous, too.
Yeah.
There's a big group gathered in that place.
Mm-hmm.
Debtors, people who couldn't keep control of credit.
Credit, yeah. There's been a flood of books employing the 12 steps as a framework for spiritual growth, and some consider it today the most powerful therapy in America. There's anthologies of how people have found recovery, anthologies of prayers. There's meditation books. I was kind of checking out the section in the bookstore today, and there's all the little meditation books for women, for men, for families that are also built around the 12-step groups. So there's lots available. There's been really a proliferation of things taken off of the 12-step groups. A description of the organization: it's not really connected with any religious denomination or cause or organization, and that's stated in their traditions and in their founding principles. There are no hard and fast rules about working the 12 steps. There are no fees if you want to be a member of a 12-step group. There's a minimum amount of organization to them, which is sometimes difficult for people to understand how it works so well. They have a philosophy that they're based on attraction rather than promotion. They never recruit anybody. It's basically, if you're drawn to it, then you can come. Newcomers are generally warmly welcomed. There's a lot of acceptance and understanding for people who are coming into the program. They have a philosophy of sharing their experience, strength, and wisdom, and hope with one another. The atmosphere is very informal. It's all voluntary. They like to think they provide a prescription for recovery and living these 12 steps, so to speak. They're non-professional. They're leaderless. And everything is optional. Help is available at any time. And people move through them in a very self-directed pace. And so one would ask, how could this ever become so popular with all of that sort of low profile and low infrastructure? But for some reason, they have really, really worked well. The 12-step program is really a philosophy of life. It can be harmonious with one's own personal theology and spiritual beliefs. A quote from a book about the 12 steps describes it this way: the house that AA helps one build for oneself is different for each occupant because each occupant is their own architect. For many, AA is a kind of going home, a return, like the prodigal son's, to the house and the faith of his or her fathers. To others, it's a never-ending journey into lands they did not dream existed. It does not matter into which group one falls. So there's a lot of room, one would say, for whatever one's kind of spiritual beliefs or even religious beliefs are. It's one of many creative tools available to individuals. It teaches people how to live peacefully, happily, and successfully, and many people would say they learn how to grow up in the 12-step groups. It promotes healing and a bringing of peace. Many people would say it's very simple. In fact, they have a slogan that they call KISS, which stands for Keep It Simple, Stupid. They have a humble realism that is both rare and convincing. They would pride themselves on saying that they're not religious, and yet six of the steps, if you notice, will put you in direct contact with a loving God you are not required to understand. Some would say it's a radically different understanding of spiritual power. Some of the other elements of belonging to a 12-step group include some of the things that are used in somewhat of a religious way. One of them is the Serenity Prayer, which is really taken out of Reinhold Niebuhr's prayer. And some of you are probably real familiar with that. It's, God grant me the wisdom to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. That's usually recited at every meeting that people might go to, usually in the beginning or at the end. There's an element of sponsorship that involves finding somebody in the meeting who sort of has what you have and asking them to sponsor you or sort of to be a mentor in learning the 12 steps. Meetings are a big part of working the 12 steps, which means you might attend a group where there's usually a discussion about one of the steps, or there's personal sharing around one of the steps, or the slogans, or whatever. And people are really invited to do a lot of emoting and to share some of their experience. And people are often challenged that you're not going to grow and learn how to work the 12 steps unless you do some sharing. So that's a real important part of it. I mentioned the slogans. There are a number of slogans that they use. You can help me out with some of these. Things like easy does it. What are some of the other ones?
Let
go and let God. Let's see. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. But they're basic, really good spiritual guidelines for living. They also have reference, along with the 12 steps, their 12 traditions, which are sort of the guidelines for keeping the programs kind of glued together around a common philosophy. Someone once offered to me a 6-word summary of the 12 steps to keep it really simple, that they involve, first of all, trust God, clean house, and serve others. Trust God, clean house, and serve others. I think someone's written a very good and short story about the 12-step programs and how they work, and I'll take a minute to read it. Picture ourselves standing on the shore, and way across the water is an island called Serenity, where peace, happiness, and freedom exist from the despair of alcoholism and other problems in life. We really want to get to that island, but we've got to find a way to get across the water, that huge void that stands between us and where we want to be. We have two choices. In the water is an ocean liner, a cruise ship that looks real posh and cozy. It's called Treatment, Therapy, Recovery. And next to it, on the beach, sits a group of odd-looking people. They appear to be rowing a boat, but we can't see a boat, and we can't see the oars. We only see these happy people sitting on the beach, rowing an invisible boat with invisible oars. The invisible boat is called AA, Al-Anon, or other 12-step programs. The ocean liner honks, summoning us aboard the treatment and therapy cruise. We can see the people on board, they're happy and waving to us. Then there are these goofy people hollering at us to join them in their invisible boat. Would we choose the liner or the invisible boat? Well, of course, we'll get on the ocean liner, the luxury cruise. The next thing we know is we're heading toward that island of happiness. The problem is, about midway across the water, the ocean liner stops, turns around, and heads back to the shore where we started from. Then the captain orders everyone off the ship, and when we ask why, he says, "Our cruise only goes so far. The only way you can ever get to that island is by getting in the invisible boat," called Al-Anon, AA, 12-step cruise. So we shrug our shoulders and walk over to the people in the boat. "Get in," they holler. "We can't see any boat to get into," we holler back. "Get in anyway," they say. So we get in, and pretty soon they say, "Pick up an oar and start roaring, rowing, working the 12 steps. "Can't see any oars," we holler back. "Pick them up and start rowing anyway," they say. So we pick up invisible oars and start rowing. And pretty soon we see the boat. Before we know it, we see the oars too. And next thing we know, we're so happy rowing the boat with the goofy people, we don't care if we ever get to the other side.
What was that from?
I think actually it's maybe taken from a book, Codependent No More, by Melody Beattie. I think that's where it's from. I actually just Xeroxed it out, but the typing looks like that. Richard Rohr is a priest, a Catholic priest, and a person who, an author who's written a lot of books. And he calls the 12-step groups an amazing gift of the Spirit. He says the spirituality behind them can be solidly founded in the scriptures and in tradition. And I think it's important to remember that they do come out definitely of the Judeo-Christian movement. They have clear and practical distillations of centuries of religious wisdom presented in a way that avoids all the smokescreen piety and the self-devotion. And people don't hang around unless they want to change their life, basically. And that is the real challenge. He believes also that they counter the individualism of our culture. And we might talk a little bit more about that. And you can see in one of the traditions where they say our common welfare should come first. And personal recovery depends on AAOA, Al-Anon unity. And so he believes that that's a real real gift to counter some of the individualism of our culture. We might challenge that. But the second tradition says that God is expressed and known in community, which is also a counter to much of our individualism. There's not a private kind of me and Jesus mentality going on. It also draws on the notion that our leaders are but trusted servants. They're not heavily ordained, and I think sometimes while the church is arguing about who can be ordained and who can be the leaders, there's something to be said about the fact that in the 12-step groups, these people are called trusted servants. Their PR policy, based on attraction rather than promotion, is something to say about truth like beauty sells itself. And there's not big marketing programs going on that we hear the church talking about these days in terms of trying to gather in more people into the flock. People are really challenged to sort of live it, and that is the attraction rather than any kind of promotional program. He also believes in some ways that spirituality is similar to the Latin American Christian-based community style of learning, if you're familiar with much of what we've drawn from Central America, Nicaragua, and El Salvador, where people came together, those who were experiencing oppression, and began to read the Bible, and the Bible became alive for them in a different way than what you and I have come to know. And that there's a real low church approach to evangelism and healing. And the first world, it's kind of a first world answer to those base communities that came out of Central America. And I think there's something to be said about the fact that as North Americans, our suffering is psychological and relational and addictive in nature, and the suffering of people who are comfortable on the outside but are oppressed and empty on the inside. It's a crisis for us more of meaninglessness and false self, and trying to find meaning in our possessions and our prestige and our power. And it's a gift of a model to view injustice from how we see it in North America. And oftentimes all of those things that we try don't work, and so we turn to ingesting and buying to fill our empty souls, calling for much of a spiritual awakening. There are six really clear movements at work in the 12 steps. There is an element of acceptance of what is, that trying to change our other people and the things outside is not what recovery or and personal growth is about, but rather an acceptance of what is. There's an acceptance of a limited self, a limited world with limits demanded of all would-be brothers and sisters. So that goes a little bit counter to sort of the culture of, you know, more growth. And there's a notion that only God is limitless versus ourselves. Along with acceptance, there's some commitments that operate. There are commitments to truth about myself and about how I maybe have hurt other people. A real self-examination that goes on. There's been a lot of, I think, spiritual exploration of what that means, the whole notion of confession and how we begin to examine ourselves and reconcile with some of the harm we might have done. There's a commitment to fellowship and community that is very appealing to people who are searching and who have experienced a lot of loneliness around some of their emotional pain. There are meetings that go on, and people find that, you know, they'll go to meetings and say, gosh, I never found this in the church, this sense of belonging. And the sense of apology and responsibility for relationships are mandated. People are really required to really soul search how we have done relationally in our lives, sometimes in a way that the church never asks us to do. And we're asked to do that with courage, and the notion of sponsorship is taken very seriously, that mentoring mentality and being accountable to one another. There's an apologetic commitment to a personal God. I think if you look at steps 2, 3, 6, 7, and 11, there's definitely throughout those the notion of a relationship to a God outside of ourselves. And then finally, there's a commitment to loving service. The spirituality is not sort of this narcissistic thing that I hang on to for myself and I get absorbed in my own sort of personal growth, that there's a real effort to move beyond ourselves in the 12-step programs and to reach out to other people, and even that they would say that was a way that they kept their own recovery, was to begin to extend themselves to other people. There are some words for the 12 steps if you look at them. The first one, I think, really draws on the notion of humility, humbling myself, admission. The second one, I think, if you look at the steps, draws on the element of trust, that there's a leap of faith involved in what I'm doing. And then in the third step, I think one would say that there's an argument for surrender going on, that there's a reduction of my own sense of ego and power. And then finally, four, I think, looks at repentance and looking at some self-examination and looking at maybe people I've harmed or things I've done. And that's very connected then to the fifth step of confession, where admitting to another person outside of ourselves the exact nature of our wrongs. And then the sixth step is really a self-emptying process, one kind of emoting or kind of coughing up or regurgitating in some ways all of that reflection. And then in the seventh step, we're challenged to look at some dependency in a different kind of way than maybe we depended before. And maybe that involves a little bit more of interdependence. And then in the eighth step, I think there's a real act of accountability, being accountable to another person. And then that's followed very much by, in the ninth step, by some responsibility. And then in the 10th step, there's clearly a challenge to live our life out very honestly and to keep that in all of our affairs. And then in the 11th step, the notion of discipline, that I'm going to continue to nurture this relationship to a God as I understand God, and that's in a disciplined and continuous way. And then finally, the 12th step, which is definitely one of service, carrying the message. Not carrying the person or other people, which is something we make a mistake of doing often, but really just carrying the message. So those are more simplified words that I think are very spiritual ones in trying to understand the 12 steps. So then, these wonderful and glorious 12 steps, do they work for everybody? And are they the panacea for the American culture? Well, not everyone has been happy with them as a solution to everything. There's a couple of movements that have sprung in somewhat of a response to those. One is called the SOS movement, which is secular organizations for sobriety, thinking that they're too religious, they're too churchy, they're too Christian. And some programs that have become more explicitly Christian out of response to think that they're too secular, that they're not Christian enough. And so there have been programs and even treatment organizations that have become explicitly Christian and biblical in response to the sort of secularness of them. So we have kind of both responses to that. But for the most part, I'd say 12-step groups keep a pretty guarded distance from organized religion and have tried to sort of not say we're organized in any kind of religious way. And I think organized religion has in turn returned that compliment and kept their own distance as well. Some of the critiquing one would make of the 12-step movement has been that this proliferation has reached the point that some have warned of a kind of addiction chic going on, or that it's been so popular that everybody has jumped on the bandwagon, and we've now defined addiction as this broad thing to exercise, to relationships, to everybody's got an addiction, you know, and we can take this model and transpose it onto all kinds of sort of problems, and it'll work for everything. It'll work for sex addiction, it will work for problems with work, people being addicted to their work, and we can just really slap this model on to anything and say it'll work for everything, and kind of become a self-help pabulum for everybody. Also, one would maybe want to argue that it's something that works for the affluent, the middle class, and does it work for people who are oppressed, and maybe people who have experienced a different kind of entering addiction, have come out of maybe poverty or economic disenfranchisement. Addiction is not maybe a metaphor to be loosely spread to everything, to all the problems that people have in society. Some would argue, in kind of discussing the theological implications of the 12-step programs, that the basic spiritual problem for the American people still remains to injustice, that we need to not move away and become so individualistic in our approach that we get away from the notion of injustice. Others have also criticized the 12-step programs for not recognizing the political and social conditions that set the stage for individual and family problems, that we have to contextualize where people come from, and you cannot just say the 12-step programs are going to work for everybody, because it's a denial of the social and political problems that have brought people to those situations. Many people also, especially women, have argued that the 12-step language is unconsciously very patriarchal. God as we understand him, and out of that has been a response to an organization called Women for Sobriety, who have said that AA and all of those things are very oppressive to women. There was an article written in a well-known women's publication that said the AA program had done a lot of damage to women because of the labeling dimension. Also that for a long time, most of the members were men. And when women started to join the program, it was the men that were teaching the women, you know, how to work these 12 steps, and that there was a lot of exploitation of women that went on in that process. Also, much of the 12-step program is a process of breaking down overinflated egos, and one might argue that that's not what women have needed. You know, throughout history, women need to be built up, and their process of kind of change and consciousness raising, it had to do with them discovering their own inner wisdom and own inner strength versus a tearing down process, and that their self-esteem needed to be uplifted, that they didn't need their ego reduced like men did. And so that many would argue that the 12 steps have done a lot of damage to women. One might also question the cross-cultural nature. Is it pretty white male dominance that goes on, and can we sort of transpose those 12 steps into other cultures? Been efforts made to maybe use the 12 steps in the Native American population, and one would say, well, the 12-step programs demand people to come and emote and to share and to be on time, and there's this kind of rigid sort of dogmatic approach, and that goes very counterculture to a lot of Native American cultures and spirituality, because that's not how they function. They're very private. Time is of a different nature. And a lot of questions, having just come back from Namibia and South Africa, was wondering what the cultural limitations are of sort of applying such an approach in another culture. And I think that also has lots of questions. So one would say, well, do all of the commendations far outweigh the criticism? One hears many, many life-saving stories of how people who, you know, would have never been able to sort of gain sobriety or to even find God. You know, many people would say, I was able to reclaim my spirituality when I went to the 12-step groups, and I was able to find God in a way that I could never, ever find in the church. And many people, I think, who found that they, throughout their struggle with whether it was an addiction or sort of emotional pain, would go to church or seek out a clergy person, and the person would say, well, just pray more or just go to church more. And they'd try doing that, and it wouldn't work. And then they would eventually maybe find a 12-step group that worked for them, and they would say, gosh, you know, this is what I really needed when I went to see my pastor and I got told these other things. So so sometimes it creates a sense of almost distancing from the church or organized religion and saying, you know, that didn't work for me, that oppressed me, that hurt me. And then gradually, as they begin to find maybe some physical or emotional stability, they're asking some of the deeper questions, and they go back to the church, and maybe we'll see the church in a different way, and find some sort of refreshing elements to be rediscovered. So has the growing appreciation closed the distance between sort of maybe the meeting room and the congregation? Because for years, maybe the 12-step groups only met in the church basement, and maybe not much more than their smoke maybe seeped up to the congregations and to the parish. And I know for years churches would complain about those AA meetings, meeting in the church, because all they did was, you know, have, you know, smoke or ashes or burns on the carpeting, and they left the room really smoky, and I don't know if we really want to have them there or not. And there was never any kind of connection or link between, you know, the church meeting upstairs on Sundays and these groups that met during the meeting, and they seemed like a secret society, and what was going on there, and there was never any connection between. I think some of that is changing. I think many religious leaders have began to suspect that maybe more lives were being transformed in the basements than in the pews, and have begun to ask some of the questions about what's going on there. And certainly there's been more education in seminaries around 12-step groups and what they have to offer in the whole nature of addiction and so forth. Before I open it up for more discussion, I want to close perhaps with... No, I don't want to do that at the close. Let's have some discussion first. Questions that people have, maybe. Yeah?
Well, another critique I heard is that sometimes people involved get addicted to the group,
mm-hmm.
and they have
mm-hmm.
trouble moving on from there, and they hang on to it too long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this rational recovery, is that part of the secular
Yeah,
approach?
That's more of a secular mm-hmm. response. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience is the church is benefiting from them now.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when we didn't understand it and all that, and the people were going from church to them. But now, we're getting secular, at least in California, we're getting secular folk. We're going through the 12-step and then coming to church.
Mm-hmm.
So it's becoming like a feeder system.
Mm-hmm. Other people have found that as well?
Yeah, it's fascinating. I had one woman interpret my sermon one Sunday. She said, that was just what we learned in 12-step. She said, were you using the book? And I said, no. It was straight from the biblical text, but it resonated with her. So she was interpreting everything in church, liturgy,
mm-hmm.
and everything else from her 12-step experience,
mm-hmm.
rather than the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of
fascinating. Yeah.
Did they come to your church after you made personal contact, or did they come on their own?
No, we have a host of 12-step groups, and so they've been meeting in our facilities, and then they had finished the 12-step and came to church, kind of checking it out.
Yeah, we have AA in our group, and I don't think one has ever come to our church.
Yeah.
Had it for 10, 12 years. Mm.
Well, of course, one, I think the pastor or somebody has to make a point of making contact with them other than just making a facility arrangement.
Okay, that's
so,
what I'm asking.
You know, I'm frequently around saying hello and welcoming them, that kind of stuff, so they, and then telling them what we do,
mm-hmm.
so they know who we are and why we're having them there,
mm-hmm.
and we see them as part of our ministry.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah. It is a challenge, though. I mean, I can remember a few years ago, the pastor at my own church asking me, you know, you work in this business, what can we do to sort of nurture and support what they're doing? Because on the one hand, you know, the 12-step groups have a very strong tradition about not being associated with any kind of cause and to be very autonomous. And so it's touchy to make that link in some ways. But I think that notion of being invitational and the notion of hospitality, but... You know, the purpose of 12-step groups is not to sort of bring people to God.
No,
you know, it's, you know, to stay sober or to stop doing a particular kind of compulsion or whatever. So, yeah.
One thing I've always wondered organizationally, obviously, someone is selling the book and all the materials, and there must be an organization somewhere.
They have conventions, it must be headquarters.
Well, compulsive people are going to get things done, you know.
There must be a bureaucracy somewhere.
Well, there is a bit of a structure.
Yeah, and so somebody receiving monies, for example, you know, you got your permission from World Services.
Right, yeah, well, AA does have, you know, somewhat of a structure, and most of the other programs are modeled after that in the same way, that has, you know, people on a kind of a service board, and they have a clearinghouse for their literature, and they have a whole process of approving and making literature official or not. And so at the meetings, all they can ever really sell generally is endorsed or AA-approved literature. It's, I think, sort of the same.
So there's a staff and there's a president.
Not very many people paid, though. I mean, it's still a pretty, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to misquote, but it's still a pretty low, very low organized kind of.
But there's an address somewhere.
Yeah.
People in an office.
Right, there's always a central office.
That's
for
New
each
York?
Organization. For AA, it's in New York. For all the other organizations, it varies.
Well, all of them have.
Yeah. But see, all of them have borrowed from AA. Yeah. So AA still becomes sort of the point of contact.
So the money comes from somewhere to support that.
No, they're all self-supporting. All the groups are. You mean in terms of supporting the literature and so forth?
That structure up mm-hmm. there somewhere.
Yeah, you can
somebody's
contribute.
Somebody's supporting that.
Right, yeah.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. that way it isn't totally unorganized.
No.
Mm-hmm.
But they pride themselves on trying never to get too organized.
Yeah.
There's much that the bigger money is Hazelden, those kinds of things.
So yeah. And that's been a real dilemma.
Hazelden.
The luxury cruiser. What? The luxury cruiser.
Yeah.
The covered programs of maintenance.
The tension has been between, you know, this self-help movement that developed and then professional treatment programs who began to incorporate many of those ideas and trying to maintain some kind of separation between those two. And it gets very complicated for people to understand that distinction. And many people, you know, the treatment programs really borrowed the elements of recovery and incorporated them into treatment. And people get usually introduced to the 12 steps whenever they go through some kind of treatment program. So then as a result of that, lots of books and all kinds of things have been written. And some of my own personal struggle around that issue, having begun work in the field when it was still a very low-key operation and they began to employ recovering people in their treatment programs and seeing that it was very much a ministry, and then it moved into the very much the profit-making realm, and that's been a real tension for a lot of people, and began to see that if treatment began to be much a privilege of the affluent and the people who had insurance and the people who could go to, you know, places like Hazelden and that kind of thing, and so that's a ongoing tension.
My experience with relatives and friends who have gone through treatment mm-hmm. is that they get indoctrinated, or they get introduced to, right. to AA while they're in treatment
yeah.
and are mm-hmm. urged, you know, almost
they always go to
required
meeting.
to mm-hmm. continue in
right.
AA
right.
when they
right.
are through treatment.
Right. Uh-huh. They see it as a long-term
yeah. I have
process.
I have a sister, a daughter, I have a cousin, friends who have been to AA or belong to AA, and more women than my experience than
yeah.
men. And what the pattern seems to be, whether they've gone through treatment or not, once they start going to AA, they go continuously, they go frequently at first, and then it gradually
mm-hmm.
tapers off until they don't go unless something really traumatic happens and they
mm-hmm.
it's like a fix. They need
mm-hmm.
you know, they really need to go to
mm-hmm.
a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big complaints, especially for those who don't smoke, is the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Because
although
alcoholics are almost invariably heavy smokers too.
Mm-hmm. Although there's a lot of non-smoking meetings.
Well, this is what I understand.
Yeah.
Now they're getting into more
yeah.
non-smoking meetings. Yeah.
They had to be in our church because of our bylaws.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, but my sister goes, she is fortunate in that her husband works for an airline and she can fly around the country, so she goes to the national conventions and really enjoys them. Mm-hmm. So the speakers are really good.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, oh, the smoke.
Yeah, and the caffeine. That's also
Yeah, the caffeine, sure.
So we're not sure they're always drug-free.
This bowing is interesting because the whole thing really was a church movement.
Mm-hmm.
It was Frank Buckner, the Lutheran pastor, and others in the Oxford movement that tried to make it
practical. Which was
the Oxford movement.
Oh, the Oxford movement.
Because Barnes Twelve said it was actually a Lutheran pastor and a Methodist and a Presbyterian mm-hmm. who put all this together right out of the Bible. I mean, mm-hmm. that's why people mm-hmm. find in sermons mm-hmm. the connection, yeah. because these are
they're spiritual principles.
Yeah.
Or, and even from other religions. I mean, you know, just
probably,
the spiritual principles.
You can learn more about other religions. But, you know, you could, gosh, if Christianity got a kickback on everything, including Christmas, we'd really be, you know, there's been borrow come. Well off. We wouldn't have anybody around.
Yeah. So that notion of how, you know, that continuing to go to meetings and so forth, I think, a process that I've seen happen a lot also is that, you know, people are pretty divorced from any kind of sense of God or religion or belief or faith system, and then maybe go some through a personal kind of recovery process through maybe some 12-step group and get introduced to this sort of way of living, and then they may try a lot of the more at the risk of not generalizing, but I'll say New Age types of you know, organizations or mm-hmm. groups or churches or whatever,
that
and
initially,
initially may do that. Although oftentimes people are usually counseled to go back to their if they had an original faith as a child or growing up mm-hmm. to try that on and see how mm-hmm. that feels. But then also a lot of times what eventually happens is things like just AA or other kind of psychological kind of self-help growth kinds of things start to feel a bit anemic, and they want more of a kind of a deeper faith that I think mm-hmm. something like Christianity has to offer them. So
the other problem is that I'm from the Bible Belt in Virginia, mm-hmm. and the churches have so condemned alcohol that alcoholics, why should they go to a church that condemns
moralistic.
Them? So, you know, particularly the Baptist church.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best thing the church can do is understand, at least get an understanding of the disease mm-hmm. of alcoholism or drug addiction mm-hmm. or whatever, so that you can speak the language and be more accepting, because people come out of the woodwork. At least 10% of the average congregation is alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
So every 10th person sitting in the pew, at least that, and some estimate up to 15%, are alcoholics.
And then 3 to 5 people are affected.
Yeah, so if you take an average congregation, they start coming out of the woodwork
mm-hmm.
if you start more
speaking.
Accepting and speaking the language.
Mm-hmm.
And they want that kind of support from the church.
Mm-hmm.
And people are drawn to a church mm-hmm. that's open to that.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is most of the churches either don't understand or they take a negative or non-accepting
mm-hmm.
View of that, and they write it off as a sin rather than as
mm-hmm.
Seeing it from a disease perspective.
I was asked to, and I did for a few years, lecture in a program,
mm-hmm.
and when they asked me to do that, I said, well, what am I going to do? And, well, here's the title of the lecture, Religion versus Spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And my first thought was, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
and I quickly got into that, where they were at. It's been very spiritual
mm-hmm.
people and oriented, but
mm-hmm.
the church has turned off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this critique of the church is kind of interesting because 12-step groups have a very heavy advantage over a local church.
Mm-hmm.
They have a homogeneous group.
They what?
A homogeneous group. If you ask in your congregation, I want all of you alcoholics to get together, you know, on Tuesday night,
mm-hmm.
People aren't going to respond
mm-hmm.
on that level. Or if you say, I want all of you who are addicted to sex,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that just isn't going to happen. in any kind of a community, whether it's church or not, but they have the advantage in that they are formed apart from a church around a given need. Mm-hmm. And so it's natural. Yes, anonymously people can do that. Mm-hmm. But how would you do that in the church?
We can do it in the church. And that is, there are churches doing it, and that is, if you, when you join the church, you come in as a wounded person. Mm-hmm. In other words, you're open about where you're at. Church of the Savior in Washington, D.C. is that way. I know that. And because all of us, every human being, is a walking, wounded person in some way. Whether it be deaths or crises or, you know, it's not all this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the problem is we aren't honest in the church. And that's why we don't build the kind of community that you find in a 12-step. They have an advantage, obviously, because they are in such crisis that they know they got to be there, mm-hmm. or they could die. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where we don't, most of us in the church, don't see death as imminent. So we have to be there because it's life and death. Mm-hmm. But if we really did come in wounded, and we're really, if we could get into small groups or whatever, and really be open about our hurts, mm-hmm. we could accomplish the same thing, because mm-hmm. churches have done it.
Yeah. Some churches have used the book When Society Becomes an Addict by Ann Wilson Schafe to kind of do that process about how organizations can become, have the elements of addiction in them. Again, this is an application of the whole addiction model onto something which has its limitations. But that's a book that's actually in the bookstore.
What's people?
When Society Becomes an Addict. So I know some churches have tried to do that. And when I first started working in the field in 75, you know, I felt a bit at a disadvantage because I wasn't personally an addict or an alcoholic, but through the process of working, we all begin to identify our own things. And oftentimes, the alcoholics would say, "Well, you can't understand, you know, because you're not one of us." And
that was very much the attitude for years, mm-hmm, you know, in mm-hmm. the earlier years.
Yeah, it's not that way now.
That nobody could work in the program yeah. who wasn't yeah. an addict.
Jokingly, I used to say, "Well, I'm a recovering human being," and that qualifies me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what we decided in the racism series, that we're recovering racists.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good term.
There's a lot of borrowed stuff from 12-step programs that you hear. I mean, even David Letterman does a spoof on the 12-step. So.
There is a program for recovering racists?
No, no. We just decided that's the best terminology to give us.
What?
Give us white people in America is that we are recovering racists.
Oh, I see.
We're all racist, but some of us hope to recover,
yeah.
but aren't.
I know when I was involved somewhat in the peace movement when we were still thinking that, you know, the whole nuclear question, you know, there were people that were saying that, you know, what militarily, where our militarism, we needed just a giant kind of AA meeting for us around that. And then when we focused one time up here in Holden on the environment and had a lot of, we had like a whole environmental conference, we began to look at the notion that really what the environment needed was everybody on earth to kind of have this giant addiction meeting or AA meeting where we sort of admitted our harmful patterns of living and what they were doing to the environment. So, you know, I think there's certainly things to borrow and to get from, but it has its limitations as well. Any other comments or lessons or contributions people might want to make to...
Well, I was just going to follow on from this gentleman when he talked about us all being wounded in some way. And the fact that we're not honest in church about some of the things that are hurting us, then my mind was travelling onto the medical module and thinking it would be starting at a church would be like going to see your doctor for the first time. And you give him quite happily your medical history. It might be nice to visit your minister or pastor for the first time and mm-hmm. have a life review. It might be good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My uncle went through treatment and mm-hmm. was made contact with Alcoholics Anonymous through this. And this was almost 30 years ago now that this started for him. I think one of the most significant things that happened to him is that he did leave the organized Lutheran church and is extremely critical of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to this day, he...
extremely critical.
Critical of the organized Lutheran church, of religion, mm-hmm. as opposed to spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Mexico, and as part of a community of people down there, to some extent formed through the AA group that he originally met with in mm-hmm. Twin Cities. And he's getting pretty old now, and an interesting thing is that through his mother, my grandmother, who just died at the age of 99 a year ago, mm-hmm. but he made contact with her kind of frontier pietistic Norwegian Lutheranism and found some solace in that, in a real old-fashioned low church kind of religious expression that he felt had much more validity for him than our current Lutheran church. Mm-hmm. And he, when we visited him in Mexico, what he really likes me to do is sing him some of the old songs. That's what he wants to hear, and tears will come to his eyes. And this, he finds me, I thought of this because what you said about they encourage people to go back to the faith in which they were raised.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't feel that the current living Lutheran church is the faith in which he was raised.
Interesting.
He feels mm-hmm. that it's taken on the trappings of
culture.
Of everything that has caused him trouble, mm-hmm. and that he wants mm-hmm. to leave it behind. But the little tiny church out in the country in mm-hmm. northeast Iowa is sort of what mm-hmm. what he felt meant something to him.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
He missed the emotionalism of it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He really missed yeah. the emotional and community of people,
yeah.
all of whom know one another
yeah.
and live with one another day to day and share their problems together as a small group, sort of, or a relatively small group. I don't know how that happens in large churches in Minneapolis when he left, or whether it's even possible, but they certainly didn't satisfy his needs.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got his alcoholism and his religion all in one basket.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was Dan Anderson, who was the founder and one of the directors of Hazleton, used to say that AA was a process or a group of, how did he say it, shared mutual vulnerability in an atmosphere of loving acceptance. And mm-hmm. I think it captures some of the elements that draw people in that we don't get in our large churches, and mm-hmm. sort of how we just, you know, come together and don't do that sort of vulnerable dimension.
Consequently, in listening to Fifth Steps, I couldn't recommend a church to them.
Mm-hmm.
As they say, they're an ego.
Mm-hmm. You mean you couldn't personally, or because of the role you were in the job?
Personally.
Uh-huh.
Personally.
You couldn't recommend what?
Yeah.
A church, a congregation.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. The goals are different. The outlook is different.
Mm-hmm.
But the support group, and again, perhaps the small groups within a larger congregation could develop that support and that
mm-hmm.
caring. But
mm-hmm.
there's not a lot of large churches that have a smaller church support.
Mm-hmm.
Would you think they'd be more?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, not everybody, you know, wants to be in a support group either.
That's true. Yeah.
There are people
oh, who definitely.
Don't sense that need.
Yeah.
One other do it a different way. You know, there are other ways in 12-step and support groups.
Mm-hmm.
People do do it otherwise.
Well, it depends on where you're at in your journey, and that's why each person really has to find their own way. And I think 12-step groups are one way that people, millions of people, have found, but it doesn't mean it's right for every person,
mm-hmm.
and you can take it or leave it. But
mm-hmm.
the fact of the matter is, it's worked better than therapy or anything else
mm-hmm.
in getting people out of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's got a track record that can't be beat
mm-hmm.
for many people, but not necessarily for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
By the same token, all AA groups are the same. You can fit in one AA group and
that's
not
right.
another.
And people will say, try 30 meetings or whatever
sure.
before you make a decision about it.
Yeah.
But I have to say, too, along that same line, it was really I came to Holden in 87, having worked in pretty nice treatment programs, except for maybe some time at a mental health center in Wisconsin, but that were, you know, using the 12-step model and were pretty dogmatic about that. And there was something to beginning to feel a bit unsettling about all that for me. And after having been here at Holden and then also doing a lot of traveling beyond the United States, I began to get really kind of bothered by the dogmatism of it and the fact that this is the only way and this has to work for everybody. And now working in with heroin addicts in Seattle, people who are pretty disenfranchised from the rest of the world, and a lot for them, the 12-step groups do not work. I mean, they're dealing with survival and day-to-day life issues that are different than us that have the sort of, I think, Western privilege of doing a lot of navel-gazing.
You say the 12-step program isn't working for
well,
them?
Well, they're not, I mean, I don't want to say it's not working for them. That's not really correct.
But it isn't.
But, I think it's still a very middle class, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
Culturally.
Economic.
In our church at home, a couple of years ago, we saw a video about and I can't remember if it was a Southwest Indian village or whether it was an Alaskan Indian village, I can't remember now,
yeah.
That the whole village adopted the
Survey
program,
mm-hmm.
and started, and
mm-hmm.
you know, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Many ethnic groups have kind of adopted it to fit their own needs.
I wish I knew what that video was. It was,
mm-hmm.
It was so moving.
Is mm-hmm. anyone making any projections about the future? I mean, we're aware that AA's been around a long time, 12-step group's been around a long time. When is the crest going to,
yeah.
or is it already happening?
I don't know. Well, it's very, very much connected to the whole kind of the self-help bookshelves. You know, if you see how they have just sort of, you know, they boomed, and I think they'll be. I don't know. I won't venture to make any predictions about that, but. I think we're going to see, I'm excited to maybe see some linking up between what both the church has to offer and 12-step groups as well. The individualism of our culture, I think, is going to be challenged.
Mm-hmm.
We can't continue to live this way and have even the environment support it.
What is your observations as to why it's not speaking to the lower echelon? Why don't those?
Well, I think the whole process of 12-step groups is very much a self-reflective.
Nasal gazing.
Yeah, and I think people who are living in day-to-day economic hardship are dealing with issues of getting enough food on the table. Are living more on the edge of life and don't have the privilege of, you know, maybe doing family of origin work when they don't even maybe even have a family to begin with, you know. And so I think it's just
that never occurred to me.
Yeah.
Don't
raise
maybe
yeah.
the education, they don't have education level to be able to kind of
yeah.
understand and follow.
But the elements of addiction recovery are also, I mean, we've learned a lot in the sense that having some kind of structure imposed on your life is very important in terms of recovering, whether it's heroin or whatever. And AA provides tons of structure to people. You know, it's like show up at meetings, you know, all those kind of things. In much the same way that and use, you know, a drug use, you know, to keep it from drinking. It has, so I think it's not just, you know, AA is the only way, but I think we're beginning to be more sophisticated at understanding what the elements are that keep people sort of in a recovery
mm-hmm.
model, as opposed to.
I enjoyed
you know,
Vino's sessions on shame.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Nancy related that, and he said it all comes back to trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep saying that it's step one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think often we want to jump into step four before we deal with the first three.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I heard a discussion on this new, on a talk program on TV just before I left home, about this new secular version and how they say that the turning your life over to a higher power is what they're against. they think you should take
control.
Control of your own destiny, in other words.
And when we bring the session to official close, yeah. We're supposed to do that. Yeah. So if people want to stay around and talk.